This is the podcast that puts you at the pointy end of the airplane with two veteran airline captains. We'll offer insight into the pilot brain, we'll have some fun, and promise not to get too techy. Each weekly episode has a segment that provides inside information on what's really going on behind the cockpit door, and we'll discuss some industry current topics that might affect your travels. Your two pilots and co-hosts are Les Abend and Mike Strauss. Les has over four decades and over 25,000 hours of experience flying airplanes. The Boeing 727, 757, 767, and the 777 were all part of Les's repertoire before he retired. He was also a Czech airman. Additionally, Les still has the good fortune to be a 21-year contributing editor for Flying Magazine. He's been an on-air analyst and op-ed contributor for CNN, in addition to MSNBC and NBC, among others. And finally, Les is the author of Paper Wings, a mystery suspense whodunit thriller. Mike is a current A320 captain and Czech airman for a major airline with over 17,000 hours of flight time. In addition to his airline experience, Mike has a diverse general aviation background as an airplane salesman and a corporate pilot flying celebrities and VIPs. If you haven't done so already, please listen to the Welcome Aboard introductory episode. Don't get on an airplane until you've listened to Candid Cockpit.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Candid Cockpit. My name is Les Abend.
And my name is Mike Strauss.
And this week, what we're going to be discussing on the takeoff segment is the recent balloon shootouts, if you will. one of them had to be the Chinese balloon. That's what it all started with. But we're doing this because we want to give people reduce some anxiety from the standpoint of this is not something that is going to necessarily bring down an airliner.
Now, certainly it stands very little chance to affect your flight whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It really does. That balloon in particular was at 50, 60,000 feet.
Right. Which is way above a regular airline.
The only airliner that I ever knew that could fly that high was the Concorde.
Right.
And
right.
It's unfortunately not flying anymore.
Nope.
And for the cruise segment, last episode we discussed the nuances of being a first officer, what it's all about being the first officer.
Or co-pilot. Or co-pilot,
yeah.
Same thing.
And this time we're going to talk about what it's like to be the captain.
Right. Yeah. But we'll have some fun with that.
I think we will.
Yeah. And then finally, for the landing segment, as per one of our listeners' requests, we'll discuss the theory about contrails in the sky being potential chemtrails. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll be nice, but we'll have some fun with it, and we'll dispel some rumors, I believe.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yep.
Hey, everybody, as usual, we ask that you invite your family, your friends to come listen to us on Candid Cockpit, and you can watch us on YouTube. And we always ask, would you send us an email if you've got a topic to discuss? We've got a listener, once again, on this particular episode that we're gonna talk about a topic that individual was interested in. So
seems like that's becoming more and more for each episode. We're getting a suggestion from the listeners, and they're good suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we love to use them. As I said, don't forget to watch us on YouTube and then follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And if you're still in the dark ages, MySpace.
MySpace. Okay. Very good. So we'll start our takeoff episode, and this one is about balloons in airspace that airplanes use.
That balloons shouldn't be in, but they may be.
Well, they may be, and for you bring that up, but at the end of the day, we launch 92 weather balloons in the United States twice a day. So and they're important to our forecasts and to our weather. So they do exist. This is not something out of the blue. To use a bad pun, my apologies. But, this gained interest after, if you haven't been watching the news and you're under a rock, it's basically been that Chinese balloon that started we just talked about when we began the episode. So that's what started it. But here's the thing. Anybody can really launch a balloon. Most time it's hobbyists that do it.
Right.
And there are, even the hobbyists have, there's FAA, Federal Aviation Agency, restrictions for how these things are launched and how they are supposed to be equipped. So a lot of this, you can do it near airports, technically. If it has a payload, then you have to have the ability to cut that payload. The balloon has to be able to be self-destructive, essentially. And you know, there's some things we have up on the teleprompter. If it has an antenna, it's got to be able to break at a 50-pound force or less.
Yeah, okay? Which really isn't much.
It's nothing at all. Yeah. You know, then an airplane wouldn't even
you wouldn't even know it.
Wouldn't even know it happened. It has to operate between 60,000 feet below. Is when these things have to be regulated. And you can't do it between sunset and sunrise. Daylight hours require conspicuous colored streamers for balloons that have a payload trail of more than 50 feet.
You can do it with sunrise, between sunrise and sunset and sunrise, but they've got to be lit.
They've got to be lit,
yeah.
Right. And the payload has to be lit.
Right.
And then you have to launch the report you're going to report somewhere between 6 and 24 hours prior. Even... you have to let the FAA know, I think it's 3 days, 3 to 6 days, I believe it is. It's down further in our teleprompter slide here, but between 3 days and 24 hours prior, so that they can potentially put out what we call a NOTAM, a notice to airmen, to let them know.
Notice to air mission now.
Notice to air mission. You're right. Yeah. Absolutely right. Thank you for correcting me. And that way, you know, they can alert pilots.
Correct.
You know, to this balloon being in that potential area.
Airspace.
So if you have a payload, I believe of, it's down here further, but it's less than 4 pounds, you don't require a lot of information. You can just release a balloon. So, for instance, when we talked about the weather balloons, there's a device on board called a radiosonde, and that sends all sorts of parameters back to the base station.
Right.
Those 92 base stations, which are the basis for our forecasts and
which
weather.
Is the irony in there is we don't. It's not that we don't like the balloons being in our airspace because they could, you know, give you a little bit of a startle, but we need them because they give us the information we need to safely fly and operate our aircraft.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, a lot of times, you know, I've seen helium balloons on departure or arrival at low altitudes, and you know, they don't cause any real problem. The ones that were shot down, I have a feeling. It's been kind of quiet now, but I have a feeling that they were hobbyists that got their darn balloon shot down, and it was of no harm.
Right. And I think it was just that Chinese balloon is the one that startled it. So now the military and the U.S. airspace, or those who watch the U.S. airspace, are looking for more of these just to make sure.
Right. And they sensitized their equipment, whatever that means. NORAD sensitized their equipment to pick up these things because it's not like having a big piece of metal, like an airplane that they can track.
Right.
Now
with radar. Yeah.
With radar. Now it's just small, what we call primary targets.
Right.
But anyhow, do me a favor. Explain, you know, put people at ease about an impact with a balloon in an airplane.
Well, your Disneyland balloon that your 5-year-old let go in the park is not going to bring down an airplane. You won't even notice it. You might see it fly by.
Right.
But typically, you know, again, these balloons don't go that high. That Chinese balloon, that whatever they want to call it, that was a high altitude balloon designed for that. And it was up above where the airliners fly. We typically fly in the mid 30,000 foot range, 31 to 39,000 feet are the most common altitudes, being 35,000, 37,000.
Right.
Balloons just aren't up there. Right. You mentioned, you know, you might see hobbyist balloons or the Mickey Mouse balloons, or, you know, you go to a celebration of life and you release balloons with confetti in it for your loved one.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, is that at the end of the day, there is a regulation to release so many balloons because counties have the regulation. Some states that you can't release so many balloons for that kind of event.
Yeah.
You know, whether anybody follows those rules, hard to say.
But I'm not going to say I haven't. You know, didn't launch a couple for my mom when she passed, but it's littering. If you think about it, you know, what goes up?
Well, that's the good point. That's exactly what it is. It's called littering.
Littering. Yeah. What goes up must come down. At some point, those balloons are going to come down.
Right.
The turtles don't like them. You see Greenpeace and all the turtle protectors. We live at the beach that there's a lot of turtles and there's a lot of regulations about turtle protection.
Right.
And sometimes you can see that, you know, a balloon hits the water. They don't know what it is. So they go try to chew on it or get the cord wrapped around, the streamer wrapped around or something like that. But there's a lot of reasons. But
beyond turtles, yeah. If we get back to airplanes.
Oh, airplanes. I like turtles. What's wrong with the turtles?
There's nothing. There's turtle. I love turtles.
You know, again, it goes back to those balloons are so insignificant to an airplane. I mean, you can take one through an engine. It's not even going to affect the engine. Even when you're flying around in small airplanes, you see them more often because you're down at lower altitudes. But, yeah, you know, they're good for a couple thousand feet, and that's about it.
Right. But the point being is that there are responsible people that release these things, and when they are released and they notify the FAA, the FAA can notify, or air traffic control
can tell the pilots.
Can tell the pilots where to approximately be on the lookout for such and such a balloon.
Right.
Because it's difficult for them to track on their radar.
It is.
NORAD has
NORAD
much more
will
sensitive.
Have the equipment. Yeah. But then they can relay that information.
North American radar.
And they
defense,
can also, yeah. they can somewhat predict where they're going to go based on weather that we've got from the balloons.
Yeah,
well, you know, true. What the jet stream's doing, if they've gotten up that high, or low-level winds.
Well, a lot of these hobbyists and scientists alike have a tracking system for these balloons, so they can actually with the GPS systems that we have today,
they
can actually notify the FAA where this thing might be.
And, you know, there's, like I said, no risk to the aircraft. Almost whatsoever, no risk to the aircraft. Obviously, the Chinese balloon was quite large. It had to get to 60,000 feet at some point, but perhaps it was launched in what's called a restricted airspace, which brings me to, I know of two tethered balloons that are on our aircraft charts. One is in the Keys, and one is in New Mexico, and it's a restricted airspace. You can't fly in that airspace whether you want to or not.
Right.
And they're on tethers up to 14,000 feet. They actually vary in altitude, but up to.
But the point with those is that they're charted.
They are charted. Know, they're, and they're permanent fixtures.
Permanent fixtures.
Yeah.
So even if, we have what we call VFR sectional, visual flight rule, sectional charts, which are basically maps, aerial maps that we follow. And It's delineated on those on those maps.
Correct. Yeah. Where these other balloons, the weather balloons and hobbyist balloons, are not. But again, this is where all of the...
But they're not tethered, right?
They're not tethered. Right. They're free-floating, but with all the technology and the notifications that must be made to the FAA, which then gets notified to the pilots, we know where they're at for the most part.
Right, yeah. Right.
Balloons?
Balloons, I think we got it covered. We got on the turtles. How we did that, I have...
I'm still bummed about the Mickey Mouse balloon I lost when I was 5 years old at Disneyland.
I'm bummed about the turtles.
We like turtles.
Moving on.
So for our cruise segment, here we are sitting at cruise. The captains we are. What's it like to be a captain? You know,
you've been a captain for what, 17 years?
I've been a captain for 17 years, and I've only been in the airline industry for 18, which is pretty rare for the fast upgrade. Typically, again, you start at an airline, you become a first officer, and then after X amount of years and X amount of experience, you move over to the left seat to become a captain. Experience is one part of it. Judgment is the biggest part, but also it's simple seniority. So I got hired at an airline that was only 5 years old at the time, so they were growing fast,
right.
And that allowed for fast upgrades. But in the hiring practice back then, you made sure that the person you hired had already been a captain somewhere else, so they knew what life was going to be like, and they could they had that type of experience.
We commonly call PIC, pilot in command experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I was ready for it. So again, but a fast upgrade, a year as a first officer, co-pilot, which was a fast learning year. But being a captain, so again, you have a captain, you have a co-pilot, captain, first officer. you share responsibilities in the aircraft. Captain has his duties. First officer has his or her duties. Captain has his or her duties. First officer has his or her duties. You know what to expect because of the way we're trained. But when it comes down to it, the pilot in command, the captain, they are the one responsible for every aspect of the flight. I mean, if there's something that goes wrong, it falls on the captain. Will basically be the one to, quote, fall on the sword. He's the one, he's responsible, just like a ship's captain as well. It's
and to let folks know, a lot of folks don't know that it is custom to alternate legs.
Oh.
So we fly, you know, so when you say the captain's responsible, he's also responsible.
When the first officer is flying. Well, so you watch him a little closer than you might when you fly.
You know some better than others. But yeah, at the end of the day, that's how, and it's important to say that because that's how.
First officer gains the experience
exactly.
to then move over the seat. So yeah, you're right. We always alternate legs. And again, it's shared responsibility. We work very good as a team, but then it allows you, and quite frankly, the more time you have as a first officer, you get to see more and more captains. You get to see good captains, bad captains, average captains, above average captains. And it helps mold you to how you're going to be in that seat when you get there.
All right. So what makes you a good captain? You can ask me the same question fair and square.
You know, I try to treat every member of my crew the way I would want to be treated. I absolutely will not condescend.
Well, I know you pretty well, so that's kind of scary, but okay.
A little bit, right? I condescending captains, and I think back when you started flying, perhaps.
Are we going to get to the Wright brothers again?
I wasn't going there. But, a captain used to be, before what became known as crew resource management came into play. A lot of captains would go look at their co-pilot and go, hey, you see that right ring tip over there? Everything this side of it's mine. And you're doing everything I tell you to do.
Yeah. I had a captain that said, this is the line. And he would go right from the overhead panel all the way down. And this is your side. And this is my side.
You can't do that anymore. You know, and I'll tell my first officers, and you always have what's called a pairing brief to get to know each other if you haven't flown. And
it's usually a pretty casual conversation.
Yeah. And it's like, look, you know, I've got thick skin. If you see me doing something that you don't think is right, don't hesitate. Call. Don't worry about calling me out on something. And if you see something you don't like, my key word is uncomfortable, and that'll stop me in my tracks. Where before CRM, I think a lot of first officers, co-pilots were intimidated a little bit by their captains. And I don't want to be that captain. You know, we're there to do a job together safely. You've got to spend time with this person, so you want to make it enjoyable.
Right.
But the key is making sure everybody does what they're supposed to, and safely.
Remember, it's a little worse than an office per se, because you know, in an office, granted, you see the same people all the time, but in an office, I'm not sure you spend. For me, sometimes it was, 12, 14 hours with the same individual up there.
Right.
You know, and there's sort of a quiet respect should just, because you're not talking constantly.
No, you're not.
You'd make each other crazy.
Yeah, well.
Depends upon the guy or gal that you're with.
So you were a first officer for a long time, and then you were a captain, but pretty quick. You upgraded
relative
fairly
to
quickly.
The time. Yeah, it was only 5 years.
Which is still a relatively short amount of time at the legacy carriers.
It was 29 years as a captain. I was I feel very fortunate. But the interesting thing was, because I had prior experience of pilot in command, and that I had been with the airline at other airlines in addition to the two American Airlines, I had the opportunity to experience a lot of different types of commands.
Yeah, I did not.
Yeah, so I applaud you, as long as your name, as we talked about before, isn't on the bathroom walls.
But, not that I'm aware of.
So, when I was ready to upgrade, I was ready. You know, there was something, there was a switch that went on and said, you're ready.
Yeah.
And I felt very confident and comfortable once I migrated over to that left seat.
And that's important, because if you walk into that left seat without a lot of confidence, it'll show.
It will show. Yeah. It will, and you know what? Your crew will pick up on it right away.
Yeah,
exactly. Know, especially with and sometimes. So, are you going to ask me the question, or do you want?
What made you a good captain?
Well, it's not me. I think the big thing is, and I'm glad my wife isn't here because she'd just roll her eyes, but the communication. You know, communication is huge. It's communication between you and the other individual that you're flying with in the cockpit. And then, of course, the people that your support group in the back of the airplane. I think, you know, we talked about on prior episodes about briefing flight attendants. And, you know, you can brief them, but you got to be sincere about it.
Yeah. You're setting the tone. You're setting the tone for the flight or for the trip.
And I think that's extremely important because they will help you in any way that you possibly need. And they are your best support groups in the cabinet. You know, I had an experience and I tried to think of what I did wrong in order for this to happen. I had an engine come apart on me on a takeoff roll at Kennedy.
Is that in the simulator or for real?
For real.
Oh, because that's what we train for in the simulator.
Yeah, I know, but it was for real. And the bottom line was, I mean, it was a high-speed abort technically, but because we weren't developing power and it was pretty obvious that, you know, we were just going to stop the airplane. But when I talked to the flight attendants, they said, yeah, it sounded funny on taxi out. And I had briefed them.
If you see or hear anything,
and I guess either they hear that all the time from captains, and sort of like a patter that comes out that's standard, and they just, you know, go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I changed my briefing a little bit based on that, and I was fairly new captain at that time.
So one of the things that I do with both cabin and flight crew when I brief, think out loud. It is one of my catchphrases. Think out loud. If you think it, say it.
That explains a lot of what I've seen with you. Yeah. Okay.
I do tend to think. Yeah. Well, I mean, practice what I preach.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes it makes a difference. You're right. Because a lot of times flight attendants will, or even cabin crew or flight crew, excuse me, you know, they're hearing the same pairing brief. Hey, you know, my name, I've been here. And before I do, you know, this is, they hear the same thing. So you do, you have to mix it up a little bit to kind of get their attention. And then they'll think more about it, you know, in that time that they spend with you.
And here's a little ego thing, and you admit to me that this is the, so, you know, especially after I had initially upgraded, you know, the few trips that I flew after that, there are times when you still, you walk out through the terminal, you look back at the airplane you just flew and you go, I'm in charge of that.
I did that.
I'm usually checking. It is kind of a great feeling.
No, it is. You walk a little taller.
Yeah.
And you need to. You need to have that confidence. Yeah. When I look back at the airplane, I'm just making sure I turn the red beacon off.
Well,
I did leave an engine running once.
Ooh, that hurts. Well, my small airplane for sure. Yeah. The other ones, anybody else can take care of it. Right?
But no, you're right. You know, people look at us differently because we are in charge. Not necessarily in charge. We're just in command, pilot in command. But you do. You have to walk a little taller. You have to. You have to walk the walk, walk the talk.
There is some been, we talk about this a lot among all the airlines. You know, we talk about captain's authority, and to some respect, it's been degraded because of the complexities of the business, and it's sort of a natural evolution. But there was a time that we were always the ones in command of boarding and everything else.
Right.
But now a lot of times the agents, you know, take over that responsibility. And fair, to be fair, it's probably better that they do.
Yeah.
But there are times when we kind of...
You got to get involved.
You got to get involved.
Yeah. So, no, it does. It does happen.
Yeah. But it's not like the old DC-3 days where, you know, the captain was the one you asked everything about,
right,
you know, to and so on.
And
so
it's kind of funny. And I used to talk about the gate agents. They know there's a captain. They know there's a first officer. But I think they now know that we do share a lot of responsibilities. And a lot of times I'll see a gate agent go to the first officer. If I might be doing something involved in something else, they'll go to the first officer and say, hey, can we do this? Or ask a question, something like that. And the first officer, he may glance at me, but he's going to answer the question or tell them, or, you know, if it, depending on what it is, officer will know and might go, hey, Captain, and go, yep, knock yourself out. Right. You know, that kind of thing.
There is a protocol. Yeah. There's definitely a protocol.
Yeah.
We got it covered. No,
but Orville Wright, who was the first? No, it's good. Again, it's there's two of us up there for a reason. We share responsibilities, but we share duties, but the responsibility lies on the captain.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Cool. All right.
As we move on to our landing segment, once again, we'll ask you to, listen and watch us on Candid Cockpit Podcast. I mean, you're obviously doing that now because you're here, but tell your friends, tell your family. We seem to be getting more and more friends and family of some of our listeners. And again, that leads to the suggestions, the topics that you want to hear about. We'll mention your name on air.
And, we bring this up every once in a while, but listen, if you got an airplane flight that you're headed off on, go to the flight attendant up front at the door. Get permission and just stick your hand in there and say, "Hey, I'm listening to Candid Cockpit."
Yeah,
see what they
say,
and they're going to say, "No, those guys are pretty much nuts." And,
well, we are good for you. And also catch us on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter,
Facebook.
Send us an email. We'll mention your name if you give us a good topic. I mean, actually, there's not a bad topic, but
we've had some good ones.
Yeah, we have some good ones, and we'll respond to your email, and we will, if we use your topic on air, we'll mention your name.
Very good. Hey, welcome to our landing segment here. We're bringing this up because, believe it or not, I've heard this topic come up in discussion. One place was at the gym for me, but other places as well. But anyhow, we're going to talk about what people are characterizing as chemtrails. Where they get this in the news, I don't know. But they're looking up at the streaks in the sky that we commonly call contrails.
Contrails.
And contrails, I don't want to take any wind out of your sails, but contrails actually is abbreviated for condensation trails.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss that these are not dangerous things that are being done by the United States government to control our minds and whatever else. Yeah, well, maybe they got your mind.
They might have got mine.
Might have got your mind. But anyhow, that's what we want to discuss and just relieve anxiety that this is not
completely normal.
Completely normal to see it. So I'm going to let you take it away with some of the science behind it.
Science.
I
didn't do very good in science.
Yeah. What causes those things?
So, the science of contrails. It is.
And my apologies. Our listener is Kim Gooding.
Kim Gooding.
Yeah.
She lives in Carlsbad. Carlsbad, California.
Okay.
Lots of airplanes there.
Yes.
And she's a flight attendant as well for United Airlines.
Okay.
26 year flight attendant. But still, a lot of people just don't really understand what it is. And from inside the jet, she doesn't see them. She can't see them. Passengers can't see them unless you're watching another jet go by.
I was able to watch contrail.
You had a mirror in your airplane. Well, you had a camera.
I had a camera.
Yeah.
777, the 300 series, 777 had a camera.
We had a mirror in the Gulfstream, but in the Airbus, we got nothing. But we can fly with our legs folded.
And you have that going for you. So please explain the science of contrail so we can get folks like Kim to understand why they're there.
We could go through the theory of what exactly a jet engine does.
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll move right on to what comes out the back of the jet.
Perfect.
Which is the exhaust.
Right.
And condensation occurs because of the hot exhaust from the jet engine is released into, you're at 35,000 feet and it's minus 60 degrees.
Right.
So it's obviously very cold and it crystallizes and it turns into ice. But there may be times where you don't have the contrails because it's maybe a little bit warmer than normal. And by warmer than normal, we mean minus 40 degrees instead of minus 60 degrees.
Or it's drier.
Drier, exactly.
Usually drier makes they dissipate quick.
They dissipate, yeah. So that's where I was going next was if they're dry, if you see contrails and they go away very quickly or they're very short lines, it's dry air. If they stay for many, many miles, and they might look like it's 100 miles across the sky, it's because the upper level is more moist,
right.
And therefore the ice crystals stay in their frozen state.
Well, essentially, we created a cloud when we went by, with the airplane.
A great analogy. It's just like another good analogy is in cold, when you breathe, you can see your air. And that's pretty much exactly what's happening. The colder, the more air you can see. And it's that's what you're seeing up there is that condensation hitting the cold air. Sometimes they're very small, sometimes they're very long, and sometimes you just see lots of crisscrossing. That's not the government flying patterns to soak a particular area with chemtrails.
It's not?
It's really not.
Okay.
So there's a podcast that you could watch.
that would tell me why they are doing that. But why, what is the crisscrossing?
All it simply is different airplanes going different directions at different altitudes.
Right. And very often you see them intersect at the same spot. Yeah.
But believe me, they are separated.
They're separated. But they're going over a particular, what we call a navigation aid, which is basically a road in the sky that has the same intersection.
Right. Or when you see a contrail bending. Airplanes made a turn, probably at a navigation base, or the pilot's gotten a shortcut from air traffic control.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen anybody play tic-tac-toe with them.
Well, sometimes there are greater forces that might be playing tic-tac-toe up there.
Good point. So. But, you know, if you want to dazzle your friends, so if you see long contrails, you can go look up and go, hey, you see those contrails?
Right.
They're really long because it's colder and more moist air. Versus you see the short ones on that, you know, and they could be very close. Believe it or not, you're probably in the same sky. You might be able to see long ones and cold ones because air changes and fronts and lines and all that stuff. But then you can say, see, the air's a little drier up there. And so,
but, you know, at the end of the day, it would take a lot of airlines, a lot of people to conspire to do something that would be totally ineffective.
Right.
Because
way up there,
because most of it all dissipates. There is some, what it does do is it's a very small percentage of how we as humans pollute the earth, but the atmosphere is polluted, you know, a little bit with this exhaust gases. There's no way around that.
No, exactly.
You know, we are actually working, the engine manufacturers are working to minimize that. But at the end of the day, it's environmental, if nothing else, that's affected.
And you bring up a good point, because a lot of the newer turbofan engines versus the turbojet engines are a lot more, A, more fuel efficient, and B, a lot more emission friendly.
Did we just get into all this?
Yeah,
we did. Didn't we? Yeah, we better shut up.
Big fans, little fans, loud, quiet.
Yeah. Hey, I think you know where we stand on contrails versus chemtrails. Hey, Captain Mike, our parking brake is set, and it looks like the jet bridge is coming up to the gate, so I think we're done with this episode.
Yeah, this is a good one. There's some fun stuff to discuss. There's fun stuff that we did discuss, and again, one of the topics from a listener. So now we get ready for episode number 10.
Episode number 10 is coming up, and on that episode, we're going to talk about how when you are an airline pilot, how does that affect your family life? There's different aspects. How do you cope with things like having children?
Yeah, you're gone for half the month.
And you're gone for half the month. Yeah. So we'll talk about that.
And again, while we begin the parking checklist, just want to ask once again: get on the PA, let your friends and family know about our podcast, Candid Cockpit.
Let your pilots know.
Oh yeah, let your pilots know
too. Let your pilots know. Yeah,
this is for you, but let your pilots know, because you may have a question right there and ask them, and they might be able to answer.
Right.
Let's see. Send us an email. Back to that again. Like Kim sent us an email, and we mentioned her name, and we addressed her her topic. If you've got a question or a suggestion, podcast at candidcockpit.com. And again, we'll mention your name as well. Also, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and don't forget to watch us on YouTube if you want to see these faces. Otherwise, you can just listen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to watch them, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, till the next flight, don't get on an airplane unless you've listened to Candid Cockpit.
Right. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.